Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, brought to you from our offices overlooking San Francisco's historic Market Street. I am Skip Rhodes, president of the club, and your chair today. We also welcome the listeners of WOSR-FM in Middletown, New York, one of more than 200 radio stations nationwide carrying America's longest-running radio program. We invite all our listeners here and on radio to visit the club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. And now for our speaker today. We are very pleased and honored to welcome to our podium the Honorable Luis Alberto Moreno, Ambassador of Colombia to the United States. Since his appointment to this post by President Andres Pastrana, an old high school friend, in September of 1998, Ambassador Moreno has been a strong advocate for a significant U.S. contribution to Plan Colombia, President Pastrana's comprehensive $7.5 billion plan to address the drug problem in his country. Late this summer, Congress and President Clinton pledged $1.3 billion to Plan Colombia in mostly military aid. Critics of the plan complained that the money does nothing to address demand for drugs at home and that the U.S. will become overly involved in the decades-long internal conflicts, mostly involving the guerrilla movement known as FARC, that have left thousands dead. Ambassador Moreno joins us today to explain his government's perspective on these and related issues. He brings extensive public and private sector experience to his job, as well as strong personal ties to the United States. Born in Philadelphia, while his father was in medical school there, Ambassador Moreno had to give up his U.S. citizenship to accept his embassy post. Both his undergraduate and graduate degrees from United States universities, and he has been a Nieman Fellow at Harvard. Please join me in giving a very warm Commonwealth Club welcome to Ambassador Luis Alberto Moreno.
Thank you very much for that warm introduction to the President of the Commonwealth Club, to Skip Rhodes, and to all of you for being here today. Ladies and gentlemen, it is indeed, before I begin, let me just briefly welcome the presence of our Colombian consul here in San Francisco, Fanny Moncayo, and her assistant. It's also a pleasure to have you here. It is indeed an honor to be asked here today to the Commonwealth Club. I would like to begin again by thanking your president, Skip Rhodes, for extending a most welcome invitation, and for everyone else for making me feel home here in the Bay Area. I've always believed that it is a good idea to escape the Washington Beltway whenever possible, especially when it means visiting San Francisco, really one of this country's most vibrant and beautiful cities. Even better, of course, is the chance to address one of the most prestigious centers for nonpartisan debate here in the United States. For nearly 100 years now, this organization has provided an ideal and timely forum to discuss a wide array of issues of great importance for California, the United States, and the rest of the world. This can be seen in your expanding operations with nearby Silicon Valley, and by your willingness to sit and listen to what a foreign ambassador has to say. As you know, there has been a great deal of activity between the governments of Colombia and the United States over the last 2 years. This has meant Colombia has received an extensive amount of coverage in the U.S. media. Overall, the coverage has been, as it should be, fair and impartial. But Colombia's present situation is far too often viewed through the narrow lens of a single issue, illegal drugs. This has led to an oversimplification of the interests and intentions of both our governments. My goal today is to fill the blanks, to to discuss a deeper understanding of what we are facing together, where we are coming from, and where we must go. It is no exaggeration to say that our bilateral relationship has never been closer, even though Colombia and the United States have had formal diplomatic ties dating back to the days of Simon Bolivar and John Quincy Adams, when another future president, William Henry Harrison, was serving as the U.S. minister in Bogota. Since then, our relationship has weathered the occasional storm inevitable among sovereign nations. But on the whole, U.S.-Colombian relations have been marked by our shared commitment to democratic principles and our mutual desire to work together for a more integrated, stable, and prosperous hemisphere. It is also worth mentioning that Colombia was the first Latin American nation to break the diplomatic ties with the Axis powers during World War II, and the only Latin American nation to send its troops to fight alongside U.S. troops in Korea 50 years ago. Still, over the last two decades, our relationship's predominant focus has been on how to combat the phenomenon of international drug trafficking. In Colombia, the advent of this menace began in the mid-70s. By 1984, narco-trafficking had erupted into an all-out war between the state and the Medellin cartel, a war where many of our most able and brave individuals made the highest sacrifice. These include presidential candidates, government ministers, journalists, business leaders, law enforcement officials, soldiers, police, and many other ordinary citizens. In all, thousands of Colombians with the courage to stand up to the traffickers. In the past 2 years, the threat from drug trafficking has changed. The nature of the narco-trafficking industry has evolved from one powerful, high-profile cartel to smaller, more sophisticated underground groups. Most noticeably, some of the multi-billion dollar profits from drug trafficking are now used to fund the illegal activities of various insurgent groups, guerrilla and paramilitary, which are at the war with the state and which provide protection for narco-trafficking assets and infrastructure. Thousands of innocent civilians are caught up in the crossfire. They are victims of extortion, kidnapping for profit, and too often, murder. It was in this environment that Colombia's President Andrés Pastrana first sought international assistance when he assumed office in 1998. His message of the need of greater burden sharing in this international fight was well received in Washington. 2 years later, the United States has committed significant energy and resources to help Colombia. And now, just 1 week after national elections, there are the inevitable speculations about new policies and priorities, both in the White House and on Capitol Hill. Changes of substance and style are one thing, but there are certain issues that transcend administrations due to strong bipartisan support bolstered by clear national interests. It is my belief that Colombia has become such an issue, and for a variety of reasons. First of all, you might ask yourself, why does Colombia matter to the United States? The fact that between 80 and 90% of the cocaine and nearly two-thirds of the heroin entering the U.S. is produced in Colombia is reason enough. No real progress in the drug war will be made without active involvement on both fronts, supply and demand, as well as the many steps in between, production, distribution, contraband, and money laundering. Clearly, a Colombia left to its own, isolated and under siege, would be a much less effective partner in these efforts. There is also the Andean region as a whole to consider. A stalwart, stable, democratic Colombia, with a government able to exercise legitimate authority in the remote countryside, and a long border shared with Panama, Ecuador, Peru, Venezuela, and Brazil, is in the interests of everyone in the region and indeed the entire hemisphere. There is also the fact that Colombia, Latin America's third most populous country and historically its most steady economy, is already the fifth largest supplier of foreign oil to the U.S., with many potentially vast areas still untapped. Bilateral trade between our two economies exceeds $10 billion a year, contributing to growth and employment in both our countries. From our perspective, however, the reasons are even more compelling. Few countries can sincerely claim not to care about the relationship with the U.S., but for Latin America, the U.S. is our dominant political, economic, and security partner. For Colombia in particular, the United States is key. This would be true if the drug issue did or did not exist. The United States is our largest trading partner, accounting for nearly half of Colombia's total export market. Many commodities vital to our economy, oil, coffee, apparel products, fresh-cut flowers, and coal are exported to the U.S. 40% of all the goods imported into Colombia originate from the United States. The United States is also our largest source of foreign investment. U.S. companies in Colombia provide thousands of quality jobs for the Colombian people, bringing with them new technologies and management skills. At the same time, the question of our domestic agenda in face of such challenges is of equal importance to our relationship, which is why I would like to take a moment to talk about Plan Colombia. After all, the U.S. assistance package is helping to fund the plan. Yet because the U.S. is investing $1.3 billion, the majority earmarked for helicopters and equipment and training of the three new counter-narcotics battalions within the Colombian Armed Forces, the main thrust of the plan is often overlooked in the U.S. media. Colombian democracy cannot be strengthened permanently until its chief enemy, drug trafficking, is defeated. It is because of more than just violence, but also corruption, and enormous damage to our environment and our legitimate economy. But there are several other critical components to Plan Colombia. Our redoubled efforts to fight drug trafficking is but one part of a much larger strategy, whose primary goal is to strengthen Colombia's democratic institutions, political, judicial, and military, and to establish a positive government presence in regions which have been neglected for far too long. In areas overwhelmed by coca and poppy cultivation, our goal is to provide meaningful, long-term alternative development to subsistence farmers. The total cost of Plan Colombia is estimated at $7.5 billion, with the Colombian government providing better than $4.5 billion, or just under 60%. Colombia's contribution includes regular appropriations from its central government budget over several fiscal years, as well as peace bonds, which are new taxes imposed on upper-income individuals and businesses in the country. Colombia has also secured loans from the international financial institutions. These loans will be repaid by the Colombian people from future government revenues. U.S. assistance accounts for about 70%, 1-7, of the total $7.5 billion program. This highlights the fact that Colombia, that Plan Colombia is, at its core, a Colombian plan and not, as some have suggested, a U.S. initiative. The situation in Colombia requires a Colombian solution, of which Plan Colombia is a major first step. Our future success as a nation depends on how our government and citizens act, and yet because the primary cause of the violence and insecurity, namely narco-trafficking, is an international phenomenon, the need for international support has been clear. International support for Plan Colombia has come from several different sources, not just the United States. To date, these include contributions in the form of grants and loans from the European Union, Japan, the United Nations, Spain, Norway, Canada, Italy, Switzerland, and Finland. We anticipate that additional international support will be forthcoming next year. But now with a change of government in Washington, we must look ahead to the next 4 years. U.S. elections are always a source of anxiety for other countries. A change at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue or on Capitol Hill can, of course, carry enormous consequences for the rest of the world. With respect to Colombia, from the outset, we have believed that the strong bipartisan commitment to Plan Colombia demonstrated this year would mean little change in the direction of U.S. policy, regardless of last week's elections results or whenever they might come. And I still believe that assessment is right. In a President Bush, we have a leader with experience governing a state sharing an expansive border with Mexico. This is particularly relevant now with a new president about to take office in Mexico, Vicente Fox. In fact, it is President Pastrana's goal to forge a tripart relationship with Colombia, Mexico, and the U.S. in terms of developing a more unified and cooperative counter-narcotics strategy. President Pastrana has had the opportunity to talk with Governor Bush about how our bilateral relationship had evolved and how we can jointly move forward over the next 4 years. For his part, the governor has spoken candidly about his support for our bilateral efforts. Even during the campaign, he spoke of his desire to maintain the agenda set by the Clinton White House and the House and Senate Republican-led Congress. We look forward to working with the Bush administration to build on the efforts started by the Clinton-Gore administration and the 107th Congress. In a President Gore, we are fortunate to have someone who is already quite familiar with what we have accomplished so far and who has voiced his support for President Pastrana's initiatives back in 1998. During the presidential campaign, he spoke in favor of continuing what our two administrations were doing, and his more general commitment to democratic nation building is similar to the goal set out in Plan Colombia, that is, working to strengthen institutions that will defend both the rights of the individuals and the greater interests of the nation and the region. With respect to the changes in the U.S. Congress, it is no secret that Denny Hastert, the Speaker of the House, has been a longtime champion of Colombia and its democracy, as well as a leading figure in drug policy here in the United States. Given the continuing Republican majority, I imagine he will continue as Speaker, which should bode well for keeping Colombia at the forefront of the U.S. foreign policy agenda. We will move quickly to educate newly elected members of both the Senate and the House on the importance of the Colombian-U.S. bilateral relationship and Plan Colombia, and seek to secure their bipartisan support for what our two governments are trying to achieve. The issue we face now is what future direction our bilateral relationships will take, given what we have accomplished so far. The U.S. assistance package is substantial, to be sure, and it is powerful proof that the U.S. recognizes that Colombia cannot stand alone in the war against drug trafficking, that is truly global, that it is truly a global threat, and requires an integrated global response. It also recognizes that a strong and stable Colombia is in the national interest of the United States. At the same time, U.S. involvement in Colombia should not be seen as a one-shot deal. Colombia requires the kind of sustained engagement that has marked almost every U.S. foreign policy success over the last half century, from containing Soviet communism, normalizing relations with China, advancing the peace process in the Middle East, maintaining stability on the Korean Peninsula, and ratifying trade liberalization like NAFTA with Mexico and Canada. As I mentioned before, Plan Colombia is much more than a counter-narcotics strategy. The same must be true of U.S.-Colombian relations. Counter-narcotics should be the top priority, but it cannot become the only priority. More specifically, the U.S. would do well to consider a more active involvement in the Colombian peace process. Such engagement has worked many times before in Central America, Northern Ireland, the Balkans, and the Middle East. A key indicator of the level of U.S. commitment can be seen in its reaction when events take a turn for the worse, as is happening at times in the Middle East process. Rather than simply walking away, the U.S. is working around the clock to find a way to end the violence and to get the peace process back on track. The reason, of course, is because the U.S. has a long-term commitment to these players and the region as a whole, and no administration and no Congress would back away from it, as we all know. To my mind, Colombia warrants a similar attention and commitment by the United States for the strategic interests mentioned before. But so far, there has been a lingering pessimism about the Colombian peace process. This is unwarranted. Sure, there have been setbacks, and the process at times seems to be dragging its feet. But this is common to all such conflicts. In fact, the progress so far has been notable. A zone for negotiations has been established. A 12-point agenda has been agreed to, and the issue of a ceasefire is on the table. There are no small accomplishments when one considers the decades of violence and mistrust that preceded it. The U.S. can make the difference here, even indirectly, in terms of working with our neighbors, with the United Nations and the European Union, to forge a strong international consensus in favor of the Colombian peace process. Let me conclude with some remarks about the Colombian economy, which is in the initial stages of recovering from our nation's worst recession in the past 60 years. While there have been several positive macroeconomic indicators during the year 2000, we know our recovery is still fragile. And we also know that a strong and growing economy is fundamental to achieving peace, fighting narco-trafficking, and strengthening democracy and the rule of law in Colombia. Most pressing is the need to help the Colombian apparel industry. Colombia shares a 1,000-mile coastline along the Caribbean. Yet Colombia is not part of the Caribbean Basin Initiative, despite our efforts to join it. As a result, the U.S. textile industry is on the verge of moving most of its operations out of Colombia by virtue of the recently passed CBI parity legislation in the U.S. Congress, which could cost our economy upwards of 200,000 jobs. There is also the need to renew the Andean Trade Preference Act, which expires at the end of next year. We believe the most meaningful economic arrangement with the United States would be a bilateral free trade agreement along the lines of NAFTA. However, we recognize that this is a long-term solution, one in which political support must be built among many stakeholder constituencies in the U.S. and in our country. But at the end of the day, freer trade would provide a more competitive, open, and less volatile environment for both our countries. Such market access is, for Colombia, critical to our long-term economic well-being. Without sustained and steady growth, without economic expansion and increased prosperity, the issues of political stability, progress in the drug war, and even peace become increasingly uncertain. These political and economic factors must be approached together as part of a comprehensive agenda that will clearly benefit both of our nations. I hope I have anticipated some of your questions about the situation in Colombia and given you a clear sense of what the objectives of President Pastrana are and how the U.S. has and will continue, we hope, to make a difference. Having said that, I would also be more than happy to answer, as was said at the beginning of the questions you might have. Finally, at this critical time in our history, when a great deal is being reported about our events in Colombia, I am particularly grateful for the opportunity to come here today and spend some time with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Ambassador, for your remarks here today. And as you can imagine, we have a large number of questions. So if you would step back up here to the podium and we'll start in. But first, usually when we have media present as we do today, they have a number of questions, which they do. But here is one that I would like to just read to you before we begin the questions. Welcome, Mr. Ambassador. I traveled to Cartagena with President Bill Clinton. Congratulations to you for this successful visit. Having heard from the media, we'll now go to the first question. The U.S. still does not have a president-elect. Do you see any differences between how a Bush or a Gore administration would handle relations with Colombia?
Well, one of the many great things about this country is that you have a very strong bureaucracy, and seldom do you find in the States a situation where there's big interruptions in any one policy. We believe, as I stated in the previous remarks, that no matter who's elected, the aid to Colombia and the commitment to Colombia will and should continue. Among other things, because the debate that took place in the Congress, and basically as a result of President Clinton's strong support, gave really the opportunity for a lot of parties in the Congress and in the administration to look closely at the issues that were being addressed. And there came as a result of that a very strong bipartisan support. Plan Colombia was approved in the Senate by a vote of 95-4, and it was approved in the House by about 70% of the Republican Party and about 60% of the Democratic Party. So it's a very strong vote of support, of commitment, and I hope that this commitment continues. I don't think that whoever gets elected will change that. I think perhaps the challenges that we have as we go forward are those of implementing this plan with success. And as always, I'm sure there's going to be bumps along the road. One thing is what you plan and hope to achieve, and the other what the situation on the ground develops. But this is why it's so important to have a high level of engagement between our two countries.
How does Colombia view the war on drugs within the United States? Do you see it as a failure? And if so, what advice do you have for us?
Well, I wish I had the million-dollar answer for that, but I don't. And I think many people in Colombia would love to see the answer for that. When you look at how much our country has suffered because of drugs, I don't think there's any country that can have a parallel when you think that three presidential candidates have been killed, that more than 5,000 policemen have been killed over the last 10 years, that a good part of our Supreme Court, judges, politicians, I mean, this has been a devastating effect on our country. I believe this is an issue in which everybody must work at. There is no one single formula for acting other than everybody along, let's say, the value chain has to work in terms of reducing the demand. There is no question that the appetite for drugs in this country, it's basically derived in huge amounts of violence in our country. These drugs that basically are fueling the violence. And in as much as we all work together and understand that this is a problem that affects us differently but affects us all, we will become much more successful in whatever we do. Unfortunately, for Colombia, in the last 20 years, what one can see is that the U.S. has, let's say, dropped some of its consumption from anywhere from, according to U.S. polls, anywhere from around 20 million users of drugs to about 12 million today. But still, this country pays a very big price for this. I mean, when one looks that about 50,000 people die in this country every year, according to General McCaffrey, who is your drug czar, because of drug-related crimes, it's a very astonishing figure. And this is a problem that one needs to look closer to the society, to how we bring up our children, and how we create the values for our families. And this is a challenge that hopefully we can all look and see as we look to the future that we did the right thing.
Do you agree with the statement that the U.S. most effective contribution to Colombia's stability and well-being would come from a significant reduction in the U.S. demand for illicit drugs?
Yes, I believe that would be definitely the best present that the U.S. could give Colombia. But this depends, again, as I was saying earlier, on the fact that the U.S. demand and appetite for drugs were to be reduced significantly. Unfortunately, the facts show us the contrary. The facts show us that getting production of cocaine down in the U.S. is a tough and painful situation. The people in jails in the U.S., a lot of them have been there because of drug-related offenses. I don't know. I don't have the perfect answer. I think nobody does.
There have been reports of anti-American graffiti that's appeared in Colombia in the last couple of months. Can you comment on that?
Well, I think there's always bound to be enemies of something like this. I mean, we have to understand that the most important thing is once we explain what is it that we are attempting to do, there's clearly going to be people who oppose it, and they oppose it because they believe this plan will be effective. And as a result, they will recur to many, many ways of opposing it. It's always good to bash the U.S. Everybody knows that. And I think Colombia and people in Colombia are no exception to that. But overall, I think there is a very important support for this. I mean, the polls that have been done in the way for support of this program show that better than 60% of Colombians approve of it. And that's what really matters. There's always going to be opposition. That's the nature of democracies. And I think that's the good thing about democracies.
No doubt Colombians must feel some resentment towards the U.S. over the issue of drug trafficking. Are there steps that could be taken to alleviate some of this resentment?
Well, I think the most important, I wouldn't call it resentment. I think people just understand that this problem is being driven by the consumption of drugs in the U.S. and everywhere else. So I would not call it a resentment. I just call it people basically understand that that's what's happening. The best answer, again, is to try to, at every level, do more in the way of stopping this problem, in helping to understand and that this is something that we must all work together, that a country like Colombia, with its size, cannot deal with this problem alone, that it needs the help of the international community and as it works out of this problem. But it's not only helping Colombia help itself, it's also creating the awareness and people being able to stop using drugs. And that's an everyday challenge.
Guerrilla activity in Colombia is now approaching 4 decades. What is the long-term solution to this problem?
Well, the only way to solve the guerrilla problem in Colombia is through a political settlement. There is no question that this is the only way. The last 40 years have shown us that the confrontation and the military confrontation that constantly occurs between insurgents and the government is taking us nowhere. Of course, making peace is so much more difficult than making war. It requires patience. It requires a continuity. You all see it from all peace processes around the world that they are not an easy settlement because parties in conflict have a lot of animosity and a lot of history of contradiction. Colombia is not different that way. And I think that the most important thing is that people in Colombia today have the awareness, unlike any other time in our history, that this is something we must resolve as a country. And we must give it all the energy we can to try to overcome it. It won't be easy. There will be setbacks. But I think at the end, we will overcome.
As a follow-up question, Mr. Ambassador, 90% of Colombians at home and 99% of Colombians living outside are opposed to the way the president is handling the peace process. Will President Pastrana admit soon that in 2 years he has accomplished nothing and will be completely changing his approach to this problem that is killing Colombia?
I'm glad that this is the follow-up question because it's very easy to criticize the lack of success of a peace process. And many people would love to go back to what we've always had, which is a conflict that doesn't seem to have an end in sight. I think if nothing else, President Pastrana's stubbornness in trying to push the peace process forward will help over time, and I think people will look back at this as a moment where we really change the tide. I believe that we must continue to look for any formula to solve the internal conflict of Colombia. I think this, the internal conflict of Colombia will not be resolved until the state is stronger, until the government is capable of investing heavily in the areas where today people are recurring to insurgency for lack of anything else. And it is really about building the state in areas where it's been very weak. And this will not be happening rapidly. It will take time, but this is why it's so critical to eliminate drugs as the factor that creates the high intensity of the conflict. I don't know what will happen in the... I believe there's many arguments and theories on peace and how peace is settled, but if one looks back at the history of successful peace processes throughout the world, normally one finds that there is heightened violence before a resolution. I think my guess is as good as anybody's, when can this conflict be resolved? But there is no question that I think we need Colombian society as a whole to continue to attempt to achieve peace. This is the only way we can solve our problems, we can solve the problem of drugs, and we can get Colombia moving in the right direction.
How would a complete abolition of the drug trade affect Colombia's larger economy?
I would think that it would help it tremendously. When one looks at the balance between how much the government spends to fight drugs and what are the benefits on the other side of drugs, it is astronomical, the difference, if you were to look at it in strict economic terms. The first thing that would happen is that Colombia could be able to attract large amounts of foreign investment, which it can attract. This concept of turmoil, of lack of stability that is perceived, clearly creates a barrier to more foreign investment in our country. On the other hand, I believe that the minute that we would not have to invest the monies that we invest today to fight drugs, but rather to be able to invest that same money to invest in our people, in education, would only make our country better. So there is no question that this is the worst thing that has come, unfortunately, to our country. We must be able to work through it, and is the only way out, is to continue to hit this problem head on.
What is your view on the effect that legislation legalizing drugs in the United States, for example, would have on the drug trade?
Well, let me first say that is a purely academic question. I spent a lot of time around Capitol Hill. I've talked to a lot of members of Congress, to a lot of U.S. key decision makers, and I have not seen one, at least in the Congress, that would step up in the floor of the U.S. Congress to say that he's in favor of legalization. Having said that, what would it mean in case drugs were legalized in a purely hypothetical circumstance? Probably that, of course, the whole supply would be regularized, and you would probably find that whatever countries wanted to produce it, but definitely the criminal element of drugs would be immediately removed.
How many United States military advisors are currently in Colombia, and how many will go there as a part of the United States $1.3 billion aid package?
There are no military advisors. They are military trainers. And in any one moment, in a month or in a week, you will have anywhere from 180 to 250 military trainers. What they are doing is training the counter-narcotics battalions in Colombia and basically creating the units that will be which their job would be to secure many of the areas in Colombia where, in the south, where the big cocaine production is taking place.
Mr. Ambassador, how can you possibly hope to win the war against the drug lords and their huge net of supporters, given the huge resources available to them?
That's a very good question. I think when one looks closer at what's here happening here is first from the production side. If you go to the countryside in Colombia where there's farmers or peasant farmers producing cocaine, they are making anywhere from 1 to 1.5 times the minimum wage in Colombia. So we're not talking about astronomical amounts. You would ask yourself, well, maybe then immediately all this, they will increase the money given to them. People, given the opportunity, will always go to producing a licit crop as opposed to an illicit crop. Why? First of all, they see the criminality that is associated with it. They see their children going into criminal activities. They see that they're not spending time in doing what they should do in the way of education and really living in a normal setting. But more importantly, if they have real good alternatives in the way of when I say good alternatives, meaning permanent crops, you must understand that most of the production of cocaine in Colombia takes place in areas where the government historically has not had a strong government presence, where there is little to no infrastructure to carry many of these crops to the market. So I think, I really believe that this can be done. In fact, it has been done. If you look at the successes of Bolivia and Peru, all of this cocaine that was being produced there, Colombia never produced cocaine. It was really indigenous to both Bolivia and Peru. And after 10 or 15 years of doing a successful job, Bolivia went from having close to 60,000 hectares of cocaine to about 2,000 today. And they did it through alternative economic development. And Peru, even though it has not eliminated the cocaine, is very much on its way to doing so. And all that production has been transferred to Colombia. So we have studied very carefully their lessons and tried to apply in Plan Colombia very much the lessons learned there to work with many of these communities to be able to work through alternative development programs.
Is part of the Plan Colombia money going to be used for special programs benefiting widows, mothers, and families of civilians and soldiers killed in the drug guerrilla war?
The Plan Colombia has, I would, without getting into many, many of the details, but I would say four major building blocks. One has to do with a counter-narcotic strategy, which we have spent a lot of time today talking about. Secondly, it has to do with a peace strategy. Third, it has to do with the building up of the government support in Colombia in the way of human rights, in creating justice, in investing really in the justice area, which is fundamental to bringing about the rule of law. And finally, in alternative economic development and bettering the Colombian economy. In the way of specific problems as to what to do with the widows of people who have lost their lives to fight for this problem, we have not done something specific surrounding Plan Colombia. However, we are looking to do something, and this was really the result of President Clinton's visit to Colombia in that direction, which the government is working on a specific plan for that. But we are not doing it under the umbrella of Plan Colombia.
How would you characterize Colombia's relationships with your South American neighbors? Does the drug issue interfere with the regional agenda?
Well, let me first say that we have very good relationship with all our neighbors, and in general terms, there is very good relationship amongst other countries. This plan has brought a lot of debate around the region, a lot of awareness of the problems of Colombia, and President Pastrana and his government has spent a lot of time working together, especially with the neighboring countries, and we will continue to do so. I think it has brought about, of course, a heightened awareness of the problem of Colombia and how they can affect the region, and I think there's many countries who are concerned, and legitimately concerned of the spillover effects that this can have to their countries. I think those possibilities exist, but frankly speaking, they exist with or without the plan. Already you see spill over into Venezuela, in not necessarily in the way of production, but definitely in the way of the initial stages of kidnappings and presence of the insurgents in the border with Venezuela, and you also see it in Ecuador. So I think this is something that can spill over and that we need to work together to fight it together, because as I said at the beginning, this is a common problem that affects us all in different ways, but it's a common problem to all.
What role have and what role can non-governmental, non-profit organizations play in bringing an end to fighting and creating a more stable and prosperous Colombia?
Well, this is a very important area. A lot of the aid and a lot of the execution of this plan will be done through NGOs. NGOs who specialize on displaced people, on human rights organizations, in the justice area. There's many, many areas where NGOs will be working hand-in-hand with the government of Colombia. And we have done so in a very successful way in the past. We had, at the beginning of 1999, a major earthquake in the Coffee region in Colombia, and it was through NGOs that much of the reconstruction was done. In fact, the World Bank considers this program one of the more successful programs to show and to study. So NGOs will be critical. We will continue to work with many of them. This is something new to the Colombian government. I don't think in the past we've had that level of engagement with NGOs. But they provide a great resource for working problems like this.
How could the present presidential impasse here in the United States on the elections affect the Colombian political situation?
I don't think it'll affect it at all. The same way I don't think it'll affect it anywhere around the world. This is a U.S. issue. It will be resolved in the U.S. and as I said before, I think this is a very strong government, and this is just an issue that will pass away, and soon many historians will be writing about the election. But I don't think it has anything to do with what happens in Colombia.
Is social and economic equality important to create peace and stability in Colombia?
It is fundamental. I mean, there is no question that the social progress of any nation is at the root of many of its problems, and especially in many developing countries. So building up, and by the way, let me add something here. Colombia is one of the countries with the least income inequalities in Latin America, which is something people don't know. I mean, Colombia has advanced tremendously in this direction. There's definitely much more to do. But normally to get there is the result of good policies, is not the result of bad government policies.
Mr. Ambassador, what assurances are there that U.S. aid will be used for the intended purposes, and who will monitor the use of this aid?
Well, there are going to be a lot of oversight on this. On the one hand, definitely through the U.S. Congress, and that's its responsibility to look over how the monies that they give will be spent, and there's many ways for checks and balances. The fact that you use NGOs is fundamental, and definitely on the Colombian side, there will be also a lot of oversight as well. And especially because much of the aid in the way of what's being done in the military, it's every unit of the Colombian military that is receiving this aid will be tested for a polygraph test to test issues of corruption, as well as for human rights. Each unit will be vetted, meaning that the key people in that unit will be checked for human rights violations, and if there are any, they cannot be a member of that unit. So there's a lot of checks and balances here, and of course the issue of transparency is critical if we are to continue these programs over time.
Are there safeguards for American tourists traveling to Colombia, and what about Americans living there?
Well, there's many areas of Colombia I would not recommend people to go because they're not the safest. But there's other areas of Colombia which are very interesting to visit. For instance, Cartagena, where President Clinton had the opportunity to go in this past August, is a very beautiful city. It's a great city in terms of tourism. There's some of the major cities in Colombia don't pose any major threat different than other major cities around the world. But there's areas in the countryside in Colombia that are not recommendable. If you look at what the State Department says, well, there's travel advisory throughout Colombia, but then there is travel advisory in many other countries. But I frankly think that, you know, if one were to go to Colombia and take the right precautions and go to the right cities, you would enjoy the country very much.
By supplying the Colombian military with sophisticated helicopters and other equipment, is the United States merely escalating the war?
Well, the other sophisticated equipment is just basically helicopters and radar to basically have eyes and ears in many parts of Colombia where historically we haven't. The reason we need the number of helicopters we need is none other to give the necessary mobility to the government forces in Colombia. Because if you were not to do it that way, you would need perhaps 20 times more the military force to be able to basically protect these areas and basically have a strong government presence. It is impossible to go to an area to try to better the schools or invest in the social safety net or have programs of alternative development if in those areas there's no basic government security. And for this, you need to get the equipment like the helicopters, which are necessary to give that kind of mobility.
As a follow-up question, can you categorically say that the Colombian military and police have successfully reduced corruption within their ranks? What of allegations that their ties to paramilitary groups essentially make the police and military vigilantes as well?
I think definitely there's the corruption has diminished, especially in the specialized units. I cannot say of the overall military. There's between Colombian military and police, there's better than 250,000 men. A lot of things can happen in a force that big. But the important thing is, first of all, in the case of the paramilitary groups, I don't think that, and nor do I believe, and I believe very strongly on this, is that at the higher levels of the Colombian military, there is no connection between the two. I cannot speak of somebody in the countryside that, you know, at one moment the paramilitaries have either contracted, many former retired military people work for the paramilitaries and are paid by paramilitaries, and that's a sad thing, but that's the reality. But I think in the case of this government, it's advanced tremendously in the area of human rights, unlike any other government in Colombia's history, and the record shows it in the way of the reduction of human rights violations in Colombia today.
In eradicating poppy and coca plantations, Colombia has engaged in aerial and ground spraying of herbicides. What environmental protections has the government put in place to assess environmental impact, protect water sources and endangered species, as well as human health risks?
It's a very good question. The largest environmental damage in Colombia comes precisely from those who plant cocaine. For every hectare of cocaine that is planted, about 3 hectares of rainforest are destroyed. Colombia is one of the countries with the highest biodiversity in all of the world. We have a little less than the 1% of the land area of the world and about 15% of its biodiversity. In terms of the herbicides that are used to eradicate the crops are herbicides that have been tested for many, many years, are used even in the United States and throughout, and are the most effective way of eradicating cocaine. Had we not used the system of eradication, I think the production of cocaine in Colombia today would be much higher. Now, The reason for doing the part on alternative economic development is something new to Colombia. We have not done that in the past, and I think this is a lesson we have to learn of how to create kind of a carrot and stick approach here, so that we can really begin to turn the tide in this direction. Before, we were just simply eradicating, and what we found, unfortunately, was that crops will move from one area to the next.
Regrettably, we've come to that portion of our program where we have time for just one last question. And, Mr. Ambassador, it is this. What would be your message of hope for the Colombians living abroad regarding improvement of conditions as a result of the drug trafficking and the guerrilla activity-related crimes in Colombia?
Well, definitely, we are optimistic that the plan that we have put together is a plan that will work. I think will become kind of historically marked as the moment where we began to change the situation. I think more importantly that we must be patient. A problem like this is not resolved overnight. It will take years to resolve. The same way one cannot say that the consumption of drugs can be eliminated overnight. We must be realistic about this. But what is fundamental is that in Colombia today, in the political leadership, there's a tremendous commitment to make this work and to advance in this direction. I think is critical for our country, and I think is critical for the hemisphere and for the world.
Our thanks to the Honorable Luis Alberto Moreno, Colombian Ambassador to the United States, for speaking to us here today. We also thank our audience in San Francisco, as well as those listening on radio. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the nation's oldest and largest public affairs forum, is adjourned. Thank you very much.